Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Recorded live in California, USA, it's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. The show that loves big, likes pop, and has fun. Now, from the Wilson World Studios, here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Tom Wilson here. Welcome to another episode of the Big Pop Fun Podcast. If you've been here before, welcome back. If you've never been here, well, we roll out the red carpet. Welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we settle in to our little leather seats of our sleigh and we wrap ourselves with fur and PETA representatives come up and splash paint on us, but it's festive paint, and they end up smiling, and we end up singing songs and playing homemade instruments, a flute that we've made out of animal ribs, and the PETA people are like, can we not play with those because we're going to buy more paint? And we go, okay, we'll use hemp, because those, you know, nature people always love everything should be hemp. Everything should be hemp. I mean, there. Yeah. Have you ever spoken with one of those people? It's really, you know, they're making cell phones out of hemp now. You can. Okay. I get it. You think it's a useful product. Great. Hemp head. But let's. Okay. Never mind my thing about hempy people. It's fine. It's a fine product and it's a wonderful. I'm wearing hemp long johns under my clothes right now. Welcome to another magical sleigh ride. The podcast is brought to you by Art As It Always Is. Please support artists wherever you are. Buy a book, buy a CD, go on iTunes, and just search around, browse. Look for an unusual band or an unusual songwriter that you've never heard of. Listen to a couple samples and buy something. Actually buy something. Don't let just Spotify take care of your music listening. Support musicians everywhere, because I have a musician today on the podcast, quite a brilliant musician. I've spoken before about being from back east and coming out here and the magical nature of California. The first time I saw California, of course, I went to Disneyland. I was visiting from college. And still, even as a college student, Disneyland was magical because it wasn't a sleigh ride, but it was magical because we had seen it so often on television back east. And it seemed like just this wonderful place with musicians. They had a Dixieland band with a tuba player there. I loved it. They had a barbershop quartet called the Dapper Dans. They have a ragtime piano player that just plays magnificently. And Jonathan May, my guest today, is the ragtime honky-tonk piano player at Disneyland. But let me tell you something. He is far, far more than that. I introduce him like that because that's a pop cultural reference that people will get and will say, well, that's interesting. He plays ragtime at Disneyland. That must be kind of an interesting job, out of the ordinary. But also, Jonathan is quite a composer of instrumental piano pieces, a composer of songs for musical theater, he's a songwriter. You know, I mean, in his own way, he writes songs, he writes lyrics. He's written songs and lyrics with his cousin Jordan Beck, and Beck and May, and they have a CD out right now. But I thought that it would be interesting to speak to a person who is a professional musician. And musicians, there are so many jokes now about musicians and as computers take over everything. And how many drummers does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. We have a machine for that now. Oh, those kinds of jokes. And as it gets actually more and more difficult to make a living as a professional musician, which is why I ask you to go out and support him. If you're at you could be at bowling lanes. And if a little trio is playing songs, you know, put a buck of the till. Well, why not? But Jonathan May is a musical artist of virtuosic ability and great artistry that I really admire. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to him on the podcast. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jonathan May.
It's Big Pop Fun.
Jonathan May is my guest on Big Pop Fun, the podcast, in his place at an undisclosed location in northern Orange County near Disneyland. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom.
Have you done a podcast before?
I have never done a podcast. You've never done? This is my first one.
I would think that you would, with being in the circles that you travel in, musical.
Not yet. There's a first time for everything. So.
Are you from Orange County?
I actually grew up in Riverside, California, Southern California.
Oh, so the southern part, southern unlike part, Orange south, County, nothing, which yeah, is a exactly, southern
right,
part.
South, it, south, or, south.
Is Riverside south of here?
It is south. Southeast, to be exact.
It's kind of out deserty.
Yeah,
it's inland,
pretty dry. Yeah.
Inland Southern California.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was it a kind of a regular house? Dad worked? Mom was at home?
Big two-story house. Dad was a lawyer, actually.
Dad was a lawyer.
Yeah, entertainment attorney.
He was in Riverside.
In Riverside.
Because that is kind of the hub.
That's
of
the place
the
to live.
Business.
Yeah, right.
Did he was it mariachi bands? He did a lot, or what was he? Who was he defending?
He actually represented film score composers.
Well, that's
so. He had some great big name clients: Trevor Jones, who did Last of the Mohicans, and Ralph Kent, who another big guy. He did like Kate and Leopold and Legally Blonde movies. So he had some pretty big name clients,
and he would Was it mostly in the music business?
Yeah.
The dad's law, he practiced entertainment law,
and he represented lots of people in the industry. He did television, film. I mean, he knew all the guys, knew all the big executives at the, you know, at the networks. And I would go to his office as a kid. I remember being a little kid, and I'd walk in, and, you know, he worked from home, and he'd have these huge stacks, you know, 200-page documents where he'd be editing these contracts for his clients, and he had, you know, a little red marker, and he'd go through and edit each, you know, put a comma here, put a parenthesis. I mean, he was brilliant at what he did. But he did entertainment. It was he was one of the best.
Was Dad ever a musician?
He was.
Was he?
He was a.
What did he do?
He was an upright bass player. Jazz bass player. So
where was Dad from?
So my dad is one of seven kids. They grew up in South Dakota, and they're all musical. So my dad's dad, my grandfather, was brilliant man. He wrote like eight. He wrote what are they called? You know, these massive orchestral pieces, oratorios. Symphonies. He wrote like three symphonies, and he was the chairman of music at several universities. So he was like a brilliant musician, and his wife went to Juilliard. My grandmother.
Your grandma went to Juilliard.
Went to Juilliard.
At a time when, boy, that was really something to have gone to Juilliard in whatever it was, the 50s maybe, the 40s?
Yeah, this was probably like 40s.
Yeah.
This was probably 40s, yeah. And they met in college, and she was a brilliant cello player. My grandfather played like six instruments, organ, and...
So a cello player
meets
an orchestral composer.
Yeah.
And they moved to South Dakota from Juilliard.
I don't know the story as how they got there, but I believe they met in New York at Juilliard. So,
and then was in South Dakota for maybe a university
job. I think he got a job. Yeah, I mean he really lived in every way for music. He played organ at the church, and you know I think he taught like three universities at once in South Dakota. So he was a hardworking dude.
Have you heard his pieces? Have you heard his works?
I've heard actually only one of them. There's not much recorded. There was one recorded that I remember hearing, but he didn't have everything recorded. I mean, he's one of those guys where you'd go to see his concerts. I mean, he was like putting on these huge concerts in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And then his kids, which was my dad and my dad's siblings, and he's one of seven, they played in the orchestra. So
All the kids
played. So my dad played violin. My uncles played, you know, they all played like strings and
stuff.
Did
they kind of have a choice, or was grandpa like, we are a musical family and you're going to play an instrument, so pick something?
I think it was like that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Or he handed them instruments.
You know, I'm not sure how it worked. I just know that they all did it really well. Like, my uncles are professional musicians now. They play professionally. One of my uncles is a composer himself. He writes for IMAX Films. Mm-hmm. And... you know, he just writes for a living. He's got a gorgeous studio up in Pittsburgh. So, super musical family. And
was mom musical, or was dad, did mom marry into this very, very musical family?
She was musical. She played like guitar and, you know, mm-hmm. piano, and I think she played flute. And it actually, ironically, met my dad at a gig. My dad was playing bass with a cover, like a cover band, at some smoky bar, and she came in with a friend and met my dad, and they fell in love.
Best place to meet girls,
yeah,
is at a gig.
That's right.
I know I did.
Same here.
And you did as
well. I met Crystal at my wife at Disneyland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You were wearing the straw hat and playing something?
I was playing ragtime piano on Main Street, and she came in.
With the outfit, with the red and white stripes and stuff? Vest?
Yes.
You have a vest and the garter on your sleeve?
I was very dapper.
Oh.
I was looking sharp.
But you weren't one of the Dapper Dans.
No, I wasn't. Not one of them.
The Dapper Dans, they were a barbershop quartet, weren't they?
Barbershop. Yeah,
they're barbershop.
Yeah.
So how did it begin with you? Did you have a choice in whether to be musical or not? Or were you so surrounded with music that you just, I mean, it was like you were already in the bathtub, might as well splash around.
Exactly. For me, I started learning to play the piano when I was learning my ABCs. I was 4. So as long as I can remember, I was sitting at the piano making up songs. And the coolest thing, so to answer your question, it was part of me. As a kid, I knew I was going to be a musician.
And was Dad teaching you the piano? I mean, he was just like intent on that? Jonathan must learn music along with speaking?
It was kind of one of those where they're like, you need to play an instrument. And if they told me I couldn't, I still would have played. I have memories coming back. You know, our shower was upstairs. My room was downstairs. And I couldn't get from the shower in my bathrobe to my bedroom without playing the piano. So my mom, you know, she's got all these memories of me sitting in my bath towel at the piano because I was in, and I'm still wet, but I have to play the piano just because I love it so much, you know. And I'd sit there and I'd, you know, practice an hour and go to my room and come back, practice an hour. And,
so when did you start lessons per se, like the formal kind of piano lessons?
Yeah, I started classical when I was 4.
You were taking lessons. You were taking classical lessons at 4 years old.
Taking classical lessons, yeah. Yeah. So I did classical from 4 to 14, and we all stayed with my aunt. My aunt was our piano teacher. So she lived in Riverside. That was why we actually ended up moving to Riverside. She lived out there.
To be near your aunt
to
for
be
piano
near
lessons.
My aunt.
Really?
Well, the piano was a perk, but yeah. Yeah.
And so was your aunt a good teacher?
She was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She you know, put my hands on the black notes first, and then we learned the white ones, and step by step. She was great. She made a lot of fun. That's what was cool about her. She wasn't real like strict classical, but she understood how to make it fun. And so I learned all my kind of fundamentals. What really set me off musically was I would go watch my dad play these jazz gigs. He says he's playing professionally in L.A. So he had a club date with a couple piano players. Actually, my uncle was one of the piano players, and they would play jazz for like 4 hours, you know.
At just a nightclub somewhere?
Yeah, a nightclub somewhere till like 2 a.m., and he would take me with him to his gigs, and I would sit there and I would just
sit there
listen.
Until 2. Listen to Misty or When Sunny Gets Blue or
exactly.
That stuff.
But I was a 6-year-old kid. All my friends are listening to like, you know, 90s pop, and I'm listening to Our Love Is Here to Stay,
mm-hmm.
and The Way You Look Tonight. And so I grew up with like listening to hundreds of standards, and I just fell in love with it. I was like, man, this music's awesome. You know, I come home and I'm playing Bach because my teacher assigns me, you know, an hour of practice, and then after I'm done with that, I'm like trying to play jazz. So it was pretty fun to get like a really wide spectrum of music at a young age. It's fun.
So at like 14, you said classical. I mean, that's a 10-year span. That seems very specific to you.
Yeah.
At 14, you just started going off and playing these, what, jazz standards or boogie-woogie or the fun stuff or...
Yeah. You know, by 13, 14, I was losing interest in classical. And really awesome timing. I went to Disneyland on my 13th birthday, and I met Johnny Hodges, who was the Disneyland ragtime piano player. And... you know, I went up and played a song, and he was very nice, and good. And then he played a song.
How did that happen? That you went up and played a song at Disneyland on the Disneyland piano on your 13th birthday?
On my 13th birthday.
Did you go up and say, "Can I play something?" Or were Dad and Mom kind of they were stage parents and going, "Hey, let Johnny play. Let Johnny go up there. Go up there and tell the man you could play the piano."
Yeah. Thank God, no, that didn't happen. No, I was with a couple of my buddies, and we were walking by, and I said, oh my God, this guy is incredible. We got to go over there. So,
and he was playing ragtime.
And he was playing ragtime. But he's not, you know, he's doing more honky tonk, kind of boogie woogie blues stuff, which is what I love. And so, you know, he saw me take notice. He said, hey, do you play piano? Yeah, I play piano. And he says, you got to play a song. And he just pulls me up. I mean, that's his personality. He just draws anyone who plays music up to the piano. So I did my best. I improvised like a boogie woogie, and it was okay. Mm-hmm. And he said, I said, do you teach? And he said, yeah, here's my card. And I studied privately for the next 4 years with Johnny Hodges.
The Disneyland
piano.
Ragtime honky tonk, man.
That's right, yeah. Johnny Hodges. He would come to our place in Riverside. He would drive to my house.
Riverside. To teach. Which is, you know, an hour, maybe. I mean, with traffic bad, but yeah, that's quite a ways to Riverside.
Yes. Yeah, once a month. We did it only once a month, but he was awesome.
Did he come in the vest with the straw boater hat and everything? And the He was dressed normal.
Pretty normal, yeah. Yeah, Disneyland jacket, you know. Yeah. But he had the Disney smile, you know, he walks in and it's Johnny Hodges from Disneyland. I'm a little kid. I thought it was so cool to have the Disneyland piano player in our house. And he'd sit down and just kill it on our piano. But he really inspired me. He would leave our lesson and I would practice for like hours and hours. Because the stuff is like, you don't learn it in classical. This is the stuff that's like underground.
The left hand. I mean, really playing bass lines with the left hand that. Very independent hands.
Yeah.
Well, not that that's not true in classical, but that boogie woogie honky tonk thing is very well. Maybe later you could play a little something and show our listeners what we're talking about. I mean, when you mean the difference between ragtime, honky tonk, bluesy, whatever,
right?
What do you mean?
Well, ragtime is interesting because it's written out. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people. Like ragtime was actually the earliest form of jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, we had swing music, we had, you know, stride piano, we had, you know, rock and roll. Like all of these styles actually stemmed from ragtime. It's the earliest form of jazz. But unlike jazz, it's written out, whereas jazz is improvised. So Scott Joplin, who wrote like Maple Leaf Rag, Entertainer, it's all notated. So it's actually considered classical in that sense.
You must play these notes in this exact time.
Exactly.
There's no looseness to it.
Exactly. Right. And Scott Joplin actually would write on his music, do not play fast. You know, and it was very strict. In fact, Scott Joplin had a really interesting life. He was actually pretty depressed a lot of his life because he wanted to be a serious opera composer. Mm. And he wrote an opera. It was an epic failure. But he published like, you know, hundreds of rags. I think he actually wrote over like 500 rags. Mm-hmm. But that's what he became known as. But he was a classical composer.
Isn't it funny how artists are that, somebody should do a study of that longing within artists to have done something else other than the thing they ended up doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because everyone, I mean, whatever, rock stars want to be comedians and comedians want to be rock stars and this one and actors want to be painters. And you just have this, whatever it is, a longing that, but that's the thing that I loved that didn't happen.
Right. And there's probably an opera composer that said, I just want to write ragtime.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's funny. Yeah. You're right about that. It's very true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but every artist really in the end is an artist. And a true artist wants to express himself in a lot of ways.
In myriad ways, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Kurt Vonnegut in one of his books had an interesting theory about children. Children will go after specifically like the unrequited longing of their parents. He said specifically, I think, their mother. But they will, that longing their parents have, they will almost catch that like a virus. Mm-hmm. And they will go after that thing in order to achieve it, even if the parent is not telling them to or leading them there or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like they're finishing the story, untold story.
Yeah, in a way. Wow. What did you do in high school? Were you just the music kid?
I played baseball. Baseball and music. Oh, wow. That was my life. I played freshman and JV basketball and baseball.
Wow.
So I was really, really involved in sports. I was a big guy. So I was the center on my basketball team. I've lost quite a bit of weight. I was about 234 in high school.
234?
234 in high school. Now I'm 170. So little transformation.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's 234.
Yeah, 70 pounds, man. 70 pounds of salads and protein bars. But I was a big guy. I was a center on our basketball team. So you wouldn't know it now, but you know, the little point guards would do all their moves and they'd get to me and they'd bounce off me and fall on the ground. You know, I was that big, big guy. Yeah. So I played sports. I love baseball. That's my thing. And then I would spend every other minute of my time in the choir room. That was it for me.
Or singing?
Singing and playing. They had the piano, yeah. So
They had a piano in there, so you'd just be in there playing the piano.
Yes. And
by the time you were a freshman, whatever, 13, 14, mm-hmm. you were a really good pianist.
Yeah. I mean, I think 15, 16. By that point, I had a couple years.
During high school,
yeah.
Was there a time, not that, you know, maybe you thought, wow, one day I'm going to be, whatever, the Disneyland ragtime player, which is so wonderfully ironic and thing that you took lessons from Johnny Hodges.
Right.
And now you are the ragtime player at Disneyland.
Yeah.
But was there a time during high school where you're at the piano and you've been working and you thought, you know, I'm really good now.
Yeah.
Was there? I mean, where it starts dawning on you, like, this is a pretty strong skill set here on the piano.
Yeah. There were a couple times, there were a couple sort of moments. I remember we did a talent show and, you know, everyone performed and got, you know, nice polite clap. And then I performed. And people were cheering. I mean, they were on their feet, like I had blown them away. And I just remember that feeling. Oh, they didn't do that. They didn't do that to the audience, but I did. So there's something special going on. Mm-hmm. That was a big memory for me. I also remember being in music. I remember a kind of a perk was, you know, being 15 years old, sit at the piano, and there'd be like, you know, six girls around the piano just admiring what I was doing. And they didn't do that for the other guy playing piano. So I thought, I think I have something a little extra in my playing because I'm getting attention, especially from the girls, which was not bad being a 15-year-old kid.
Sure.
I definitely realized I had something special. And, you know, I remember my mom would drive me to Disneyland as a 15-year-old. I couldn't even drive. And I would play at Disneyland. I performed.
You were playing at Disneyland at 15?
Well, I would. Yeah, my teacher played. And so he would say, hey, come to Disneyland while I'm playing and play a couple of your songs. And so I would, you know, invite me up to the piano and I would perform. And people were blown away. Who's this kid from the audience playing this crazy ragtime stuff? Mm. And, you know, people would say, hey, you know, watch out for your job. This kid's going to take over. And ironically, I did. Uh-huh. I mean, a lot of feedback as a kid. People saying, "You need to do this. You need to keep doing this."
Were you composing in high school?
I did. I composed actually more choral music because I was in choir. I composed a choral piece for my teacher the year I graduated, and then I had written about an album's worth of piano songs, jazz songs, and, you know, whatever pop songs.
Instrumental
stuff.
Uh-huh. You recorded that?
I still have never recorded it. It's on my bucket list. Uh-huh. I got to do that. Yeah. But you know, it's like a work in progress. You know, as an artist, it's never perfect. And you're still chipping away at things always. But it's sort of one of those things where I don't want to put it out till it's done. And it'll never be done because I'm an artist, and it's never, you know, that need for perfection.
Even with a song, like painters will talk about that. I mean, if you have to, in finishing a painting, the fact is you just have to decide that it's done because you'll never be happy with the it's not a finished product to you. You always think that color's not perfect or something. So you feel that with a song as well? Do you feel you have to, it's not really saying a song is finished.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in a sense, just surrendering and giving up and say, well, I guess that's the best I can do it right now, so I'm going to record it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, because I think as artists, we keep changing, and so sometimes our art is just a snapshot of where we're at, and it's honest because for that reason, to where we're at. So it includes all of our flaws. It includes all of our imperfections, and it shows our weaknesses. But that's part of the beauty of art, I think, is that it shows something that's real within the artist. So, you know, yeah, I absolutely feel like I could put out, and it's good stuff. It's just, Yeah, and maybe also just a sense of putting in the work into that. I'm working on other projects right now and stuff. So,
when did you? I mean, when you were out of high school, did you just become a musician? Did you go to school after that?
I did. I went to community college. I went to Riverside Community College and
studying what music things? Or?
It was actually more general ed. To be honest, like most of my musical training has been private lessons. So I studied with Johnny Hodges. I also played in the UC Riverside Jazz Big Band when I was 15. So I was pretty young.
Well, isn't that a lot of? I mean, what I've found with musician friends of mine and actor friends of mine is by the time they're in their late teens, they're 19, they're 20, they really don't have time to go to class anymore because they have gigs.
Right.
I mean, they're working professionally already in the things that they're supposed to be studying for to finally work professionally in about 3 years.
Right, yeah.
And they're saying, I can't make the rehearsal. You know, Mr. Johnson, I'm working as an actor, or I had a gig.
Right.
You know, a friend of mine in Philadelphia was, quite a brilliant pianist, and that it was a real problem trying to get a music degree because you can't go to class because you're working as a musician.
Right. And they're teaching you things in the classes that you already know.
So he's sleeping.
Yeah.
So he's just sleeping. Right. Like, this really?
Yeah.
You're teaching me?
Yeah. No, it's so true. I got the Disney gig, the ragtime piano gig, when I was 18. I was a senior in high school. So,
what happened? Did Johnny Hodges retire, or did you actually sort of not you you know consciously push him out?
Yeah.
But did they say this young kid with energy and everything, and Johnny's had to look at the sunset?
Well, he called me actually out of nowhere and said, "Hey, we're low on guys. We need subs and can you come audition? Just private audition." And the way Disneyland works is they'll have a big public audition. Hundreds of people show up. It's a big formal thing. But he said, "Hey, we just need more guys. Can you come privately?" And so I showed up, and I was supposed to audition at like 1 o'clock. I showed up early. I knew Johnny was playing that day, and so I came and played a tune on the piano in the park. But the audition was supposed to be in the backstage area. I went up and played one of my songs, finished, and turned around to leave the piano. And Johnny says, "Oh, play another one. Play another song. Play another one. Okay, play another one." I turn around, and there's the hiring manager. He had just auditioned me.
Oh, so you had auditioned without knowing.
Without even knowing it, yeah. And I literally walked up. He said, "You're awesome." He said, "You're hired. Shave your goatee and you're hired." And so, I haven't had a goatee ever since.
Really? No goatees at Disneyland?
No goatees, yeah.
But and then you were hired, and Johnny just decided to just take less shifts?
So I was a sub. I worked as a sub. And then they would call me sometimes once a week or once a month. And then literally the next month, I started working at a restaurant playing piano. And it was a brand new restaurant, really nice, you know, high end, and they didn't have music. And I actually cold called them and said, "Hey, you guys got an awesome restaurant. I think you need live music." I pitched it to them. I brought my keyboard, played a couple nights, and then they said, "We want to buy a grand piano
for the restaurant."
For the restaurant,
buy a grand piano because that's such a good idea.
Yep. And they bought a grand piano, and I had that gig for like 4 years, just playing piano 3 nights a week at a restaurant.
What kind of stuff do you play? You know, you play Born Free? Do you play that kind of easy-ish listening grand piano music when you're at a restaurant as opposed to Disneyland?
You know, it's really different. Disneyland is riggity-tickity-tick, hey, look at me.
Hey, and happy, you know. happy. We're all at Disneyland.
Yeah.
I'm not denigrating that. I mean, it's a thing that you do.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's appropriate with kids with, you know, ice cream cones and popcorn. You know, a restaurant, you know, people are having their date nights and it's candlelit. So, you know, I'm playing...
What, Girl
mostly,
from Ipanema?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, kind of jazz standards.
You're pretty good. Oh,
you're
thank
pretty,
you.
We should work together.
Yeah, I'll beatbox for you as you play. It'll work out tremendously.
That would go great at a restaurant.
Buy mozzarella sticks and stuff. But you did not play during Christmas at Nordstrom.
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. Thank God.
That's okay.
Yeah. I did do Gottschalk's department store.
Oh, did you do department store playing?
I did one. I did the. Oh. I don't even know if they're still around. Gottschalk's, and they paid me in gift cards.
They really did, just in merchandise.
Yeah.
What did you buy? Like ties?
You know, it's really sad. I probably used one of the 10 gift cards, and then I think they went out of business. So I've got all these Godchocks gift cards.
That's how they got you. They know we're going out of business anyway. Right. You might as well go out with music. Give him gift cards. He won't even be able to cash them in. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you are still, I mean, you're still working at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, and I know we won't go into the whole, you know, underbelly of the Magic Kingdom or whatever. But what's one of the crazy things that's happened as, you know, the ragtime guy with, do you wear a straw hat, like the boater thing, like a 1920s sort of outfit, or what kind of outfit do you wear?
The hat is a bowler. I wear a bowler cap,
sure.
You know, garters, bow tie.
Garters in the arms.
It's very attractive on me. I'm just
bow tie.
You know, bow tie.
Is it colorful, like red or pink or something? Peach?
It's blue.
Oh, blue. Okay.
Blue and white. It used to be red.
Uh-huh.
Now it's blue. And yeah, it's very, very like turn of the century.
And when you do that, do you do it alone, or do you have a stand-up bass player?
Alone.
Alone.
It's solo piano.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And where do you do it? Do you do it at a restaurant there or out in the street?
It's called Refreshment Corner,
okay.
And they sell hot dogs and you know, Cokes, and people sit outside, and the piano's on a little stage outside, the upright piano, very simple, with an umbrella, and I play, you know, mood music. It's ragtime,
sure.
But it's, you know.
And you continue smiling no matter what people say.
Right.
No matter what some dude comes up in a gigantic, greasy Cincinnati Bengals jersey going, hey, do you know any Leonard Skinner? Or whatever.
Right. With tequila on his breath.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
Because he did shots in the parking lot. Right.
Do you have at Disneyland, and I'm sure everyone behaves themselves, but are there occasionally, you know, a little security problems at Disneyland with the piano player? Is there a guy that you look at like, hey, Rick, a little help on aisle 13 here. Clean up aisle 13. Need a little help with this dude.
Yeah, you know, that would be nice. Not all the time. I mean,
you just have to deal with it when let's pick a fight with the piano player.
Right.
But the person who wants to, I imagine, the person wants to talk to you way more than you either would like to talk or can talk because you're playing intricate ragtime pieces.
Yeah. That's a good question. I figured out how to deal with that. Yeah.
Smoothly.
People are pretty respectful. I haven't dealt with too much. You know, my wife always gets concerned that, you know, the girls are going to come, you know, honing in on me. So I just tell her, first of all,
you've lost 70 pounds.
And I wear a bow tie.
And you wear a bow tie and a bowler.
Well, there you go.
And when I wear that, my wife goes crazy.
Well, I've got the glissando, the thing, the gliss where you just go right up and whack them off the piano.
What a glissando is. Don't come up with your intricate musical terms and think I don't know.
Well, you're a guitar player.
I'm a tuba player.
Is that right?
Yeah, I played the horn first, tuba and valve trombone. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, sure. Jazz musician. I did a tour, European concert tour, Austria. Oh, yeah.
You're kidding. On tuba?
On tuba.
Jazz tuba.
Jazz tuba.
So you know how to like solo on a tuba.
I know how to solo on a tuba, Mr. Not Respecting Me for any kind of musical acumen. I can read music.
Yeah? Yes. Well, I'd love to hear you play some tuba. Maybe we can do a duet.
I could play a tuba.
Did you bring your tuba?
I did not bring my tuba. Usually I have it just as a good luck charm.
Yeah.
You know, I carry it in the back of my car just to have it. But my wife, the lovely Mrs. Wilson, and I used to play tuba piano duets many years ago.
Is that right?
I played from the Magic Flute. I played Mozart. I played some Bach. I played many things.
Really?
Yeah.
This is an unknown.
Romeo Ben. I play. Yeah.
Dad, people don't know this about you.
They try to forget.
They try
Those
to forget.
That do know? I have to clear that from my memory because it's just not. No, but I played the tuba. For a long time. And then, of course, it was, you know, I was in high school, so I sang, so I had to play the guitar.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, that, I mean, you kind of look like a tuba player, I think.
What do you mean?
Well,
what do you mean by that?
You look like you could hold a tuba and with confidence, you know, like, you know, in high school you see, like, the big kid playing the flute and then, like, the tiny guy holding, like, the bass drum.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you look like
you're saying I fit the tuba player.
You'd fit, yeah, you look... I mean that completely respectfully.
Right.
Of course. Of course.
No, and when I look at you, I no. just sort of see a bowler in a bow tie that's in like powder blue. I see you playing your art while kids are eating ice cream cones, spilling them down the front of their shirts as their mother tries to liberally apply sunblock and says, "We would go out to the park, but the piano player's in our way."
You nailed it on the head.
I nailed it pretty much on the head. Has it been as enjoyable working it? And you have there are many aspects of your musical career that we will get to.
Yeah.
But I know that just being the Disneyland ragtime guy is only scratching the absolute surface. It's the tip of the iceberg. But have you now enjoyed being, the ragtime honky-tonk player at Disneyland for now many years?
Yeah. It's been 8 years.
Yeah.
And
are you going to become the new Johnny Hodges?
I don't know. We'll see.
Are you still enjoying it?
I do. It was something when I was 18, and I'm 26 now, and it's different. I've settled in. I'm married now. I wasn't married before. Right. So there was really something kind of cool about, this young hottie piano player and, having the girls, running around, Coke Corner. And now it's like, it's probably
really
describe more
yourself as a young hottie piano player, which is fun. Man, I'll tell you, I've never described myself as a young hottie tuba player. I never have, but I'm going to start thanks
you
to you.
You should.
Back when I was a young hottie tuba player.
Yeah.
did you meet your lovely wife at Disneyland?
We met. I was at Coke Corner. And she was hanging out watching the parade, and I came up for my last set of the night, and I noticed her. I was like, wow, she's very attractive, and came up, started playing, and I saw her. We made eye contact. I winked at her.
She
I had a guest.
Young hottie piano player.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and then I think I said, hey, does anyone play piano? Crystal's a piano teacher, so she raised her hand. And so I said, hey, come up and play a song. And she refused. She wouldn't. She's pretty shy about that. But that's all good. So I finished my set. I came straight down to talk to her. Because I was like, hey, she's a piano player.
You didn't bring her onto the stage? Because I was going to finish the story that you brought her up on stage. And you guys played Heart and Soul. And you did the thing where you would put your arms kind of around her because you were playing way up the keyboard. And then you were playing bass way around it. So you're sort of hugging, but you're playing Heart and Soul. And then in front of a lot of kids eating ice cream, you just start making out.
Yep.
Okay, I went a little crazy at the end of the story, but that's what I meant. So she didn't come up, but you went down and you talked to her.
Yeah, I talked to her. We talked like an hour, about every family and all these things that really matter, and religion and music and all, like stuff that you normally don't talk about in your first conversation. And it was really cool. So, we got married a couple years later. So that's been a really fun thing to have come through at Disneyland.
Yeah.
But I do love it. It's fun to, I think for me, the most fun is actually making the parents, like seeing the delight on the parents' faces when they see the delight on the kids' faces.
Oh, sure.
Whereas before it was about the kids, and now I'm sort of seeing the bigger picture. It's fun to entertain people who appreciate the music, especially like older people that came from that era, where they hear you playing, cheek to cheek in a stride piano style, and they go, I remember my grandma or my dad or mom playing that all the time, and so they know it's the music that they grew up listening to. Mm-hmm. So it's really it's rewarding. Yeah, very much.
Now I talked about the tip of the iceberg, which it certainly is, playing stride and ragtime piano, but you are a composer of significant gravity and artistry.
Mm-hmm.
So when did that kind of composition come? When did you start working on that sort of music?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was really actually after high school. I was working on these piano songs through when I was in high school. But in 2000, I want to say six, I started doing more songwriting. And I teamed up with my cousin, Jordan, and who's a lyricist, and we just started writing songs
now, was
together.
Jordan, you know, you are you now got you two guys mm-hmm. are known as Beck and May.
Yes,
and you have performed your music all over the place. I mean, the Kennedy Center
yes.
in Washington D.C.
Yep,
and all over. So that's terrific. But before, like, was Jordan quite musical? From the same family, like I'm not saying it correctly, but he is your cousin.
Yeah.
So was he a part of that great musical tradition within your family? That he is a musician, or was he just he was hanging out? He was kind of writing some stuff, writing some poems or lyrics, and
yeah, he's on my mom's side. So my dad's side
forget
was
him.
Like
he's not a musician.
Sucks.
Don't dump it. He
terrible.
Just started writing
lyrics. But his lyrics aren't bad. Yeah. No.
like when did you at a family reunion? You know, when did it happen that he said, "Well, I'm writing lyrics and you're writing music. Maybe we could."
Well, he would show me his lyrics. He was writing with another composer.
Oh, okay.
And he was good 4 years older than me, so we didn't hang out as kids, right? Mm. He's 13, I'm 9, you know.
Right.
Would never dare hang out with someone that much younger. Yeah. But, you know, when I was 19 and he was 23, and it was like Thanksgiving, and, you know, it was very typical to go to his house. Oh, hey, Johnny, check out this song I wrote, whatever. And so he showed me a song of lyrics that didn't have music. And I said, hey, I'll take a stab at that. Let me see. So I came back a week later and I'd written a melody, and it was total chemistry. It was a song called "A Little Tude," and it's about a girl who's copying an attitude to her parents, and they send her to her room. It's a very silly song, but it's probably one of our most well-known songs now that people perform because it's such a unique, you know, a unique song.
Mm-hmm.
So we just started writing, and we actually that. Fall decided to write a musical called the MySpace Musical, and within a couple months we had a producer from New York City that wanted to option it, and we wrote the whole show, went to New York, did a reading, and went on. We wrote another musical which was commissioned by another theater.
Let's go to the MySpace
sure,
Musical.
I mean, yeah.
That was had to be a very specific, like, you had to get that out.
Yeah,
because MySpace was a balloon that was blowing up.
Yeah, and it was ready to pop.
That popped, right. Popped. That popped at some point.
Yeah. We capitalized. It was 2006, which was kind of
that time. Sure.
It was, you know, Facebook just was, but it wasn't as cool.
Right.
And so he had actually approached his other partner to write it, and the other guy was like, MySpace, the musical, what are you talking about? That, no one's going to care about that. So Jordan called me and said, hey, do you want to write this? And I was like, sure. I was 19. What did I have to lose?
Right.
And so we started writing it, and people were really interested in it. And we wrote it about this character who was an aspiring, like, cinematographer, wanted to make movies, and so he uses MySpace to try to launch his career. And We just went for it.
Uh-huh. And after the MySpace Musical, then you went on to do another entire musical?
Yeah.
Like you were thinking early on, you guys had come together, and you were thinking of, you know, but you were thinking Rodgers and Hammerstein. You were thinking, let's make the whole chunk. Like, we'll think of it in terms of an entire musical.
Yeah.
Not song, 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 let's do an album or something like that.
Right, right. Initially, it was just songs, and then we had, like, 4 songs, and then we had 6 songs, and then we're like, well, how is this book going to work? And we didn't have a book writer, so
yeah. I just meant in terms of, you know, Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers and Hammerstein, those guys, as opposed to Burt Bacharach, Hal David, and they just do you know the way to San Jose,
right.
And they're just getting together and they're just doing songs,
right?
And they're trying to get them into publishers' houses, houses, and
Get.
You know, this Dionne this Warwick was to sing them.
Yeah, this was a musical. We're setting out for 2-hour show, you know, front to end, and we needed a script, and we needed the whole So we did it. We wrote the show, and we finally performed it after MySpace kind of had started sinking. Uh-huh. And
what was that show called?
The
next one.
Oh, the next show. Okay, so the next show we did was actually Peter Pan, a new musical version of Peter Pan. And we did that for a theater in Redlands. They commissioned us. And we did that one, I guess, in 2009. I think it was 2009 we wrote that.
Because Peter Pan had come into the public domain.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the initial reason was to do a new score, like the old the Mary Martin version. The score is pretty dated. It sounds very, I think it was 1960s, and so they wanted like a pop score. They wanted a newer sounding score. So we did a 16 new songs, and we took the Peter Pan story and kind of made it our own, and really highlighted Wendy. So really telling the story from Wendy's perspective. Mm-hmm. Of having to grow up. So
how did that go?
It went great. The theater, it was one of their best shows they did, and they've done it at least once since then. And we actually have gone to license the show. It's been performed in Australia theater out there, and it's orchestrated for a small orchestra.
Oh, so that's kind of a royalty thing then. If somebody else does it, then you make a little bit of money, which is good.
That it's good as an artist to have that trickling in, just have a show out there and
how
being
many
performed.
Shows did you guys have? You guys ended up writing.
Those are the only two that we've written.
The two where it's the entire show,
correct?
Because I know there's quite a bit more material that are just that are songs that I've certainly heard because I've been out in an evening. Beckoned me. Have I not?
That's right.
Do I
support? You have. I think we met each other back in 2000. Was it 9? 2009. I think you came out and saw Maisie, your daughter
singing.
Was singing. Yeah.
Was singing a few of your songs.
Yeah. Couple. Yeah. Yeah, which Maisie is incredible talent. She's my go-to singer in the studio because she nails it. She knows she's got great pitch. She's got great personality. She's easy to work with. I can't tell you how many singers are just like impossible
to
work with in the studio.
What is it like to work with singers? When you are the composer and Jordan is the lyricist.
Yeah.
And the singer comes in,
yeah.
Whom you've do you hire them or they kind of at maybe they want the opportunity or they would like to have a demo for themselves and you could use a singer that has some good pipes,
yeah.
So they come in and what generally is that like?
Generally, it's pretty good. I've realized most singers don't read very well.
Music.
Yeah, they don't read music. So if I give them the music and they come back, they can't sing it. And so I just realized, okay, if I, pretty much by default, when I write a song, I record it.
Yes.
Me singing it. And that covers the bases. Uh-huh. So they can learn it from the recording. But,
it's the old joke about guitar. Like, what's the best way to have a guitarist play quieter is put sheet music.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
But in the same way with a lot of
practically
singers.
The same with singers, yeah. But in the world of musical theater, it's a little different. In the world of pop music, there's far more who can't read. But musical theater, because so much of it is written out, generally they're okay.
I will say I'm a singer.
Yeah.
And I've been in many shows.
Yeah,
and I can read the music and I can go along and sing along and all of that stuff with the parts.
Yeah,
but even I like to hear it.
Yes,
because I like to hear what the syncopation is, what the feeling of the song is, like how it's coming across,
right?
Which I'm still either, I just don't have that kind of a skill set or it doesn't come across reading the music, looking at the sheet music and saying,
right.
Oh, this is kind of the vibe of the song. This is how it is.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that doesn't usually get reflected in the music.
It doesn't.
How a singer phrases it or the little nuances sometimes, especially in pop, you have a note, but you want them to kind of scoop in or scoop out or do a little stylization, have them improvise a riff or something.
Do a demonstration for people how you scoop in.
I don't do that.
Oh,
I don't.
You don't scoop in at all?
No, I don't scoop.
You play
I sing
grace
it straight.
Notes on the piano, don't
Well,
you?
That's a different story.
You don't scoop in as a vocalist, but you play little grace notes in your jazz. Anyway, I guess everyone will have to just look that up on the internet.
They will.
Scooping in and grace notes.
Yes.
But how many songs have you written, you think, with Jordan?
Goodness.
A lot. You have CDs out?
Yeah, we did a CD a couple of years ago, Cousins, the songs of Beck and May. And it's 12 songs that are not in musicals, just standalone pop songs. Mm-hmm. Very musical theater flavor to them. But
how would you describe that? What do you mean by a musical theater flavor?
Yeah. They're musical theater in the sense that, lyrically, they're very musical theater. There's more to them than in a typical pop song, where you have typically less words in a pop song.
Right.
They're more wordy. There's
and there's sort of a narrative, I would think, to it. It's sort of a character in some situation.
Yeah.
Describing themselves. It's not just the eye of the tiger.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's
right.
Nothing like that. It's,
right.
I mean,
you should have sang
like
on
that.
Our album.
I should. I rock the eye of the tiger.
Hey.
I mean, if you wanted to do, you know, a version.
We should do. We should
like
do a version, a tuba version. Solo tuba, and then you can harmonize. You can sing with the tuba.
I think that's something the world has been waiting for so very long. And you have, so back in May, what would people look up? Is it on iTunes, Cousins?
It's on iTunes, yeah, Cousins. We have, I think,
Songs of Beck and May.
Yes, that's right. I think it's on SoundCloud. It's on all the major, you know.
Reverb Nation.
I think it's on Reverb Nation. What is that other one? Anyway, it's online.
It's on
yeah,
all that
and
stuff.
You can buy it. You can buy the actual album on Amazon.
Uh-huh.
So,
and are there other albums, or that's the album?
Honestly, that's what we've done primarily as far as like official recordings. Right. I mean, we've written over 100 songs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a lot of them weren't ever recorded, or they were just performed or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the way it ends up happening as a songwriter. You write tons of stuff, and then you record your best.
For the best ones, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we picked 12 songs for the album, but we had a lot more than that to choose from. So, check it out. Songs of Beck and May.
Yeah, I just remember so many people, and even they're very, very famous singers and, mm-hmm. and rock stars and everything, but I really, I've always found, even the ones I like,
yeah.
when you get that new CD with all of the stuff they didn't release before,
yeah.
previously unreleased material, and I've bought it, I almost always think, oh, that's why that song didn't make it on the album.
Yes.
Because it's just but doesn't really quite cut it.
Yeah, it's really interesting in the world. I mean, you know this. You know this yourself, being a songwriter. Like, especially musical theater, like you'll go through 6 versions of a show before you come up to the final version.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You might write 100 songs.
Absolutely. And as the king of writers who write songs that just quite don't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
It's very easy to write those. It's very easy to write those. Those just come out like gangbusters.
Yeah.
And then you play them and you think, why on earth did I think that was worthwhile in my notebook?
But yours are you're really funny about it, so I think you can tie it into your comedy show pretty well. I mean, hey, I'm going to do a song about my daughter. I'm going to do a song about...
Well, I have those, but most of the time, they don't work that well.
Oh,
because I think with stand-up especially, you need to write a song that is funny.
Yeah.
And that's... It's much easier to write sort of clever or ironic or... You know, or something, wordplay, any of that stuff, which will pass in other areas at a comedy club.
Yeah.
People are just thinking, hey, it just you have to hit like a stand-up triple at least. We're not asking home run, but we have to go like, hey, that was funny.
Right, right.
Not and just like, boy, did you hear that last part of that verse? What interesting wordplay, huh?
Yeah, right.
It doesn't, that doesn't cut it at all.
Yeah, very different than our album. I mean, you know, like I said, musical theater. One thing, the difference between musical theater and pop is musical theater generally has perfect rhymes. Like, you couldn't rhyme, you know, pot with, you know...
South or... I know what you mean.
It has to be perfect rhymes. And if you don't write perfect rhymes in the musical theater world, you're inferior.
Isn't that changing? I think it is, because I'm hearing a lot. And I'm I'm not the old time. They didn't rhyme pot with not. I'm leaving.
Right.
You know, not that guy.
Yeah.
But sometimes now, the near rhyme of lyrics, you are thinking, wow, that's pretty gutsy. Because it really doesn't... It's the same vowel sound, kind of, but it's a very different word. But people are just, hey, man, that's the song. Like it, not like it, and people like it, which is fine. If it works, I mean, if people are just going, yeah, I think that's good, you win.
Right. Well, it works really well in pop, but in musical theater, it's high art. It's, you know, there's an elitism, I think, to like, especially critics. Like if you write a great musical and you don't have perfect rhymes, you'll have a critic you know, point that out.
There's elitism in people who wrote Shrek the Music.
Well, I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing what's out there. There's a lot of movie musicals. It's kind of interesting.
Being done on stage now?
Yeah. A lot of movie musicals. A lot of these production companies aren't taking risks with original works. They're just doing.
This is something you saw on your TV.
Yeah,
come and watch kids and do it live.
Yep. Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins. Yeah. Footloose. I mean, there are a lot of them.
Absolutely.
Shrek was a musical. Was on Broadway.
Right.
I don't know. Still.
Oh,
might be.
I think it is still on Broadway. Yeah. There's a few. I mean, like Little Mermaid. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, and Beauty and the Beast. A lot of the Disney films. But mm-hmm. they're doing. A League of Their Own.
As a musical.
Yeah, they're talking about turning that into a musical right now.
Of course, the big number, There's No Crying in Baseball.
There's No Crying in Baseball.
And all the girls come out and they slam their mitts down on the ground. There's no crying in baseball, because baseball, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm already writing it.
You're great. You need to do that. You need to do more of this stuff, I think. You need to write a musical.
I don't need to write a musical.
I think you should.
I think I might someday.
Yeah.
From my electric showbiz wheelchair, with that I will cover in glitter. I think I'm going to have rhinestone. I'm going to bedazzle.
Yeah.
My electric wheelchair, and it has to turn very quickly.
Yeah.
So I could be in like a senior citizen version of A Chorus Line.
I'm seeing it. You could perform next to Liberace's piano.
Yeah,
you'll fit right in.
Or we have everyone sitting there, and everyone just goes, one, singular sensation, you know, as we turn.
Oh, man.
You haven't been writing with your cousin Jordan for a while now. Is this a decision that you both made in order to pursue other independent work, or is this something that, you know, Jonathan just said, hey, Jordan, for right now, man, I'm doing a lot of Disney stuff. I'm doing gigs all over the place, and I just can't write together with this kind of stuff. Or is it just, you know, or is it the market that, you know, people are buying Footloose the Musical and Mary Poppins, so you're thinking that the small, arcane kind of musical that you would think about, people, that's just not spinning the wheels of the truck anymore.
You know, yeah, it's not so much that. It really, you know, Jordan and I have worked about 5-6 years together. We write great songs together. We did this album, and it took an immense amount of time. Yeah. And so there's a big aspect of only having so much time and having a lot of projects. Being an artist, I've got a lot of things that I'm trying to get done. And so I think we kind of hit a point where we had different sort of goals in mind as far as the bigger career picture. So, you know, we're both pursuing our own things right now. That's not to say we won't write again. And we do have a project that we'd like to finish, which is another musical, which we are collaborating with other Broadway writers on. I'll just give you a summary of what it is. It's a book that was assembled as five diaries from children who died in the Holocaust, and one of them is Anne Frank. And we all know the diary of Anne Frank, but there were four other kids whose diaries they found. So there was a guy who assembled them and put them into a book called We Are Witnesses, and so we're looking at turning that into a musical. So. With these other writers, these other current Broadway writers collaborating together on it. So,
I won't be doing that one in my electric wheelchair.
No, you won't.
I will not. Or if I do, I'm going to remove the glitter and rhinestones. Certainly, I guarantee that.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be heavier.
It'll be that's pretty heavy duty. To write a musical. A musical about that. I mean, just approaching it artistically, like putting music to those kinds of words, is a kind of like a sacred responsibility.
Absolutely, yeah. These kids, their voices were never represented. So yeah. I mean, we're gonna give them a voice, and each one of the writing teams has a different child that they're gonna write for, and then we're gonna put all their stories together it's kind of a song cycle. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where they're independent songs, but we're going to tie them through and, you know, tie the characters through. So, but you know, so the relationship with Jordan, you know, it's fine. I mean, it every writing relationship is has its challenges, and you know, there's the business side and there's the personal side, and so it's making it all work. But right now, I'm working on my own music.
Good. Hey, I don't. You know, I admire anybody who can work with somebody or a group of people for any long period of time.
Yeah.
And not that I'm not a nice person, but I would think just artistically that as soon as that, well, maybe I've been independent for so long, and maybe I just write my things and I put on my shows.
Yeah.
I can't conceive of some guy just going, yeah, I don't like that one. Let's not do that one, but let's do this, but a little faster.
Right.
And I'm a nice person, but I would just go, who are you?
Right.
And
right.
Why
right.
am I listening to what you say?
Uh-huh.
I couldn't be, you know, in the rock band, and you're sort of musical when you're a teenager, so you make a little band with guys.
Yeah.
I was terrible at that because, like, oh, let's not do this, but let's play rock and roll hoochie coo. And I would just go, I quit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. What?
Yeah.
You can't quit the first day.
Yeah, right.
I
right.
just, no, I'm not learning rock and roll hoochie coo. I don't, hey, it's a fine song and fine that it's high school dance, but I just don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was.
Well, you're a solo artist, man. I mean, you've got your thing and you do it really well. So I don't think anyone should be imposing.
I don't think it was, maybe it was by design. Maybe it was those meetings with the band guys that I just got to have to pick up a guitar and just go. And it's just like a microphone and me, and I just say things. And I'll make up stuff and just say them.
Yeah.
Or sing them or whatever.
It's awesome. And by the way, I'm reading your book. It's phenomenal. It's hilarious.
You liking it, really?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. I really am. I'm enjoying it. You're talking about this. I mean, I'm in the just read the chapter one where you go to this convention and
it's something
pretty interesting.
Well, I can't take too much of your time, and I do. Would it be all right? Can you play the piano for everybody? Just give them a little
absolutely.
Little demo?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you don't have a tuba, do you?
I don't have a tuba.
Darn it. No. Can you sing like a tuba sound? Can you just like make a...
That'll be great. That'll really sound. Bring it together. Yeah. But thanks. But before we go, so they can find Cousins on iTunes. Yeah. Are there any other ways to find you and look you up and see your things?
I have a couple websites. I have Piano with Johnny, which is a website where I sell... courses of my piano arrangements.
Oh, so you teach, and you've made are they like video kind of things?
Yeah, they're high definition video shot above my hands, and I'm teaching my arrangements, explaining the theory behind it.
Why didn't you do a commercial for that while we're talking?
Well,
where do you find that?
That's called pianowithjohnny.com.
JONNY.
Yeah,
for Johnny.
Pianowithjohnny.com. Yeah, JONNY. And then I have another website. It's Jonathan May Music. And that's more of my sort of overall personal website where it highlights me as a composer, as a songwriter, as a pianist. Jonathan May, JONATHAN. And you can listen to what I've been doing recently. I just put out a 5-song EP, and it shows where I'm performing. So.
And what's the future musically for you? Do you know? Are you going in a direction, or are you in a place where you're just kind of looking around?
Yeah, my latest ideas were to potentially move to Nashville to pursue more songwriting. Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm loving writing songs on my own. I'm writing my own lyrics, but you know, I'm really open. I'm super open to writing opportunities and traveling and taking on new projects. You know, working with new people and whatever. I mean, the sky's the limit. So,
Johnny May, you are really an inspiration and a really fantastic. I mean, as a person who loves music and whose family was surrounded with music, and I've loved music my whole life, but I have such a great respect for solid musicians of such ability and I guess work through their whole lives. It's wonderful to watch that kind of facility with music.
Yeah.
It comes freely, and you and I know, of course, the thousands of hours of work that it took to stand up there, sit down at Disneyland with a big smile on your face and make the absolutely shockingly intricate look absolutely simple.
Yes. You
know, easy as pie.
Well, here's some classic rag. This is Maple Leaf rag.
Okay.
1898, this was composed.
Now, what would like honky tonk piano sound like?
Honky tonk is
it related to that?
Honky tonk is sort of an, like, talking about music from that era. It's not a specific sound. It's more like it's more like everything that wasn't ragtime. Like honky tonk would be like, to me, it's like bar music.
Okay.
So something, you know.
Boogie Woogie.
Oh, Boogie Woogie, gosh.
Because we're talking about a little bit later, right?
Yeah.
Not the same time period, but sort of related to that. Like a left hand.
Yeah, so the boogie is that whole, you know, the left hand thing. It's a... that kind of
thing. I can hear, like, I don't know, what do you think the percentage is when you hear something like that of people saying, that is so inspiring, I want to take piano lessons, and the percentage of going, I'm quitting the piano, because I'm never going to play the piano again.
It's amazing. Most people go, don't come near me, you know, doesn't want to play piano? Oh, you play piano, you know, come over here, Tom. No, I don't play. And then you find out, yeah, they play, but it's intimidating. I think people get more intimidated than not. But then I'll get someone who says, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've played piano. Where'd you learn that? Mm-hmm. Well, someone showed it to me. It's not written down.
Can you just I'll let you go, but can you play some composition that you like, that you're proud of, that's representational of some of, you know, of an instrumental piece that you've
written? Let me show you an arrangement I did, little stride arrangement of Cheek to Cheek.
Thank you.
thanks so much to Jonathan May for being a guest on the podcast. What a virtuoso, huh? And that kind of virtuosic playing is always so inspiring and makes us all wish that we can do it. And if you want to play like that, like I do, go back in time to when you're 4 years old and start working really hard for your entire life, and you'll be able to play like that. Simple. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody over at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me out on a live show. And thanks to you for listening, for telling a friend, for subscribing. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.